All right, welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host this week, Jared Griffin. And every now and then on Talk of the Rock, we'd like to bring in some of our colorful staples in our community to see what they're up to, and especially those with big news. And so we have some big news. Today with me, I have Jeremiah Doc. You might know him as Doc Meyer.
Yes, with an S, like an rum. S. No relative.
No, no connection there. And so, Doc, you're here because one, you're retiring, mm-hmm. and this is big. And so, we just wanted to get kind of a retrospective of your time on the island. Not that you're really going anywhere, yeah, but
not all the time.
So, do you want to elaborate? Tell the community what is your what is your big news?
Well, it's nice to be included with bread and bacon and eggs. You know, the staples are pretty important. you know, I got out of school, and actually, your last year is internships, and so I went to the Strategic Air Command, which doesn't even exist anymore. And then my second internship was a Long Beach Naval Yard, which that doesn't exist anymore. And the third one was downtown in L.A., where every building has bars on it, kind of like working a mission. And I did that for 8 or 9 weeks. And the last one was our own Alaska Native Hospital, but it was the old one on 3rd Street. And from that perch, I called around Alaska trying to find a niche, because I was raised in Southeast, mostly in Wrangell, but in Petersburg a couple years, in Cordova, went grade school a little bit in Sitka, and then college in Sitka. So Southeast was my familiarity, but the towns were too small to be a resident doctor. I would have had to have a boat and hop around, which attracted me, but not all the time. And so I called over to Sitka, and there was a warrant officer named Thompson at the base. And he said, "Why don't you come over here? We've been sending all of our eye needs over to Anchorage on the med flight twice a week." And then I called Canna, and trying to think who was in charge in those days. He was also our city manager for a while. But he called and said, "Yeah, you come over here. We have $30,000 we have to spend by Christmas, in fact." And so I hurried up with graduation and came up. And at that time in Kodiak, I went on Hotline and put in an ad for a place to stay, and there weren't any. And Ken Dam called me and said, out in Bell's Flats, there's one place that's empty. And he lined me up with the owner. And I ended up being out there for my first winter in Kodiak.
And without giving too much away, what year was this?
1982, okay. The winter. No, it was 1983. I graduated in 82. And I was a broke student. I bought an old Ford van with mud tires. And while I was in Anchorage, I bought a bunch of used furniture from an office that was closing down, and got on the ferry and came over here. And I couldn't find an office until I went up to Dr. Bob's. And he had the green building up there behind Ford Motors. My stepdad actually had built Ford Motors building after the the tidal wave. And so anyway, I'd stayed with them over in Anchorage a while and came over. And Dr. Bob gave me the right-hand side of that building. And, you know, he was a shrewd businessman, because he said, "The toilet's at the other end, and you have to use the hallway to get down there, and you've got 40% of the building, so I'm going to charge you 40% of the space." And so anyway, we shook hands on it, and it was a really nice place to set up. The walls were like stone on that right side, and I hung things from the ceiling. You know, Dave Horn's father, Jim Horn, was alive in those days, and he actually built that building, and he helped me hang some hanging glass cases. And so that began my career, and I was up there for a couple years. And then the subway building, we call it, was completion. And, you know, Dr. Shank had got up here before me about 5 years earlier, and there had only been one doctor here, Dr. Finner. He bought Finner's practice, per se, and set up in the first of the commercial buildings, which is there where the Rookery is, and North Pacific is still there, Med Center. He was in cahoots with them. Dr. Krillman's still practicing there. And I set up in the other one, and down on the far end where the Coast Guard is now. And I was there 15 years.
Oh.
And in that time, we, you know, I was married to Sally, and I set up, she was a licensed optician, and when I met her running a clinic with three doctors in it over and off of Gamble across from the Sears Mall, and I brought her over here with two babies in arms, and we set up a one-day service. And for over 12 years, we delivered your glasses in 1 hour. And that was very successful, but mm-hmm. I had to have six employees, you know, because we were open Wednesday nights and Saturdays. And the problem with that was that six salaries, and they all drove nicer looking cars than me after a couple years.
So what was it like, you know, being a young professional in a kind of remote place?
It was exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be involved in everything. And so I started off with, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and kind of went through those chairs. Mm-hmm. And in those days, Wayne Harar and Dave LaFay were both in the chair succession. And we had both, all three came from tourism towns. I mean, Wrangell, I made enough money to buy a motorcycle 2 years before I was old enough to drive it by selling garnets on the dock to the people coming off the Princess Lines. Mm-hmm. And Wayne, he was familiar with tourism. And Dave had actually came out of Ketchikan and worked with their tourism. So we took the constitution of Ketchikan, erased Ketchikan on it, and put Kodiak. And they wouldn't go with me, but I went before the city council of the borough, mm-hmm. and because the bed tax in those days went to the chamber, and yeah, but the chamber was a file cabinet up at the borough. That's what it consisted of.
Oh, sure, yeah. Back then, everything was its own little nook in the building. Yeah,
a little nook, and so they had the ferry terminal building there, and when the money started coming into the Convention Visitors Bureau, we rebuilt that building there and took the old one out to the fairgrounds. And so when you go out there and you see that pentabode, that was the ferry terminal office. In those days, Jim Ashford was very busy with it. He talked me into running the Crab Festival out of my clinic. And for 3 years, that was the first kind of city award I won, was some Project of the Year chairman.
For Crab Fest. Mm-hmm.
And in those days, we had a queen contest. So I got the Lions Club behind it, and we had a dozen girls selling tickets, beating doors, and having chaperones going through the bars. And mind you, in the 80s, there were five bands playing on a weeknight. There was standing room only. Mm-hmm. People used to do something in those days called dancing. And
you don't call it that today?
Well, those people all died. And but they were fun, you know. And so we ran that program of the Queens, because it had scholarships.
Right.
Sometimes 10,000, 5,000.
Oh, goodness.
Depends how much money we got. They got a portion of it. And mind you, we had floats I drew the picture, kind of because I was working with it, three times. So if you look back at Crab Festival pins, three of those I designed. And one was a crab in every pot, you know, a puffin in every tree, you know, kind of off of Franklin Roosevelt, a chicken in every pot.
Yeah.
And another one was, we're puffing about Kodiak or something. And then the last one I did, I took my dad's picture, which he was an old salt, and his Helly Hansen's, and I drew his face in a ship's wheel, and it was Old Man of the Sea. And, you know, that was our biggest parade. We had everybody that had a boat had some kind of float, and it was exciting.
The crab boom years.
Yeah, it was still, we were still the King Crab Festival, but mm-hmm. we had killed that species off by the mid-80s.
Sure.
You know, and mostly... mostly then the halibut quotas and all that stuff started getting preparing. So those were the early years of working with making 1 hour service. And my kids grew up, I coached little wrestlers and little dribblers for 10 years. And I was president of the PTA, you know. It was just fun being involved in the community. Cornelia Collins and I, one year, was presidents together. And, you know, that's where the Cornelia Marie of the show
Deadliest Catch comes from.
And it is funny. I still have some of the blankets off that boat, you know. so when it finally came to the point where it seemed like there was more commercial space than there were commercial people, you know. And that building that Norm Sutliff built after the earthquake was built in respect of an earthquake, and in between every stud are 245-degree knees, so if it shook, it wouldn't crack the sheetrock.
Right.
And in the early years, that was a Sutliff's depot. And in the clinic part where you have the optical lab, the ceiling had an open, and with a forklift, they would raise the sheetrock or the plywood, and it was on rollers, and they would roll it down the floor. Well, it was built help for stout. There's four layers of 3/4-inch plywood between the ceiling and the, you know, I mean, just to put a pipe through it, I needed a long,
right,
a long drill.
Built to last.
So we moved into there in 2000. And we, it was about the end of the lab portion, you know, of doing eye care. VSP became a prominent insurance in the United States, and part of their program, so they made the most of the money, was they controlled also the labs. You couldn't do your own.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
And that caused me a divorce. Well, it wasn't all just that, but you know, she said, I'm not working for them. In fact, I'm not working. She disappeared into Samoa. We didn't see her for a long time. But she came back. It just wasn't the same. So the kids all kind of grew up, you know. I raised four of them here. They all loved life, have a little Jesus in their heart. They all found a niche. My daughter's a Mohs surgeon. She went through dermatology and specialized in cancer of the face. Nick is a comptroller for Seattle Genetics, which is does, you know, a lot of cancer and Hodgkin's disease and stuff in Seattle. Now, Julian is the primary advertiser designer for Amazon. And Bubba, the one with the lowest blood pressure, he's a plumber. And he lives in Hawaii and is pretty mellow and plays music all the time. So I feel thankful none of them are on my couch.
Yeah, right.
None of them wanted to be an eye doctor. I could never understand.
Well, a couple of them sounds like they got into medicine. Yeah, but what led you to becoming an eye doctor?
You know, it was a long route. I was very nearsighted growing up. I can blame it on Archie and Superman, because I read funny books under the covers with a pen light.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it wasn't so bad when the pen light was new, but right, as it got older, it was tears would water in my eyes. But I was raised in Wrangell, and I can remember when the recruiters came from Sheldon Jackson, AMU, which is now UAA, and University of Alaska, they stopped in all of the schools, the high schools, and they still do that, and trying to say, raise your hand if you think you're going to college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't think I was. I'd never been groomed for it. My grades were okay, but, you know, my dad was a logger, and mom had just done grade school, basically, but she was cooking pies for the local restaurant. But my dad's sister had a master's, and so did my grandmother. And they both taught school. So there was some education in the, you know, the relatives' motivation. But I came home from school. My dad had a suitcase in the middle of the floor, had two pair of Frisco jeans, zip-up can't-bust-him shirts, long suspenders, and cork boots. And he said, I got you a job in John Campbell Logging Camp. And I thought, you shouldn't have, Dad. And I found out I could bleed every day on this job, you know.
And I did bet. Oh,
yeah,
gosh. Oh,
it was
yeah,
rough. I was behind a setting chokers behind a D6 wide track cat. And so when it came 4th of July, I went out working for Fish and Game, building fish ladders. And that was a lot safer and a little more fun. And so after that, I talked three buddies into joining the Navy with me. And we all went to Fairbanks, our Anchorage, and they found out I had TB as a child. And they said, sorry, next. And so they took my buddies and, you know, they didn't look pleased because I was a motivating
You're
factor.
You're the one who convinced them to go. And
what
now?
Are we fighting for? Oh, we don't give a damn. You know, we were pretty excited. We're going to see the world. So I went to Sheldon Jackson. And I was 17 when I started school. Huh. And the rules there, if they caught you for disciplinary action, they kicked you out. Mm-hmm. And if it was after 3 weeks, you got no money back for tuition or room and board. Well, school started on the third. And my birthday was on the 26th. And we had a party in my room. The dean of students busted us and threw us out. So I went out on a shrimp boat. And I worked on that for 3 months and learned that I didn't want to be a shrimper the rest of my life because I was on the deck. Skipper was in the pilot house.
Sure.
And finally, I got back in. And actually, it was 7 more schools before I actually got through school. But no one was helping me. So I'd stop and I'd work and had some great jobs. I went to Vegas. I was a broker on the London Exchange for a while. I opened with 2 other guys for Kenny Rogers for a while singing.
So let me just pause just real quick. Is there a job you haven't done?
Yes, I'm sure. I worked 3 different state departments, would you believe? Well, you know, I worked in the jail down in Juneau for 6 months.
Born through a party in the county jail. The prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the drum began to swing. You should have heard the locked out jailbirds sing.
So when I did finally decide to go, I needed 60 hours of all of those courses you dread, which are micro, calculus, physics. And I needed them in 1 year, and it wasn't possible unless I went to 2 schools. So I went to Cal State Fullerton, and down the street there was Fullerton College. So I took the simpler ones at the simple college, and I took the harder ones. And so I went 18 hours and 6 at the other twice in a row in summer classes for 12 credits and shoot in.
Oh, my gosh. That is insane,
man. It
was
just a bad year. But I was still playing music 3 nights a week in a steakhouse. So that was that kept me fed and so my roommates, too. So when I got out, you know, I wanted to come home. Hmm. And like I said, Southeast Alaska, just there were 2 doctors in Sitka. 3 in Ketchikan, 5 in Juneau, 20 in Anchorage, and John was the only one here in Kodiak. And, you know, in Wrangell, you have a boat before you have a bicycle. So I kind of needed that element, and we grew up on venison, you know. And when I found out how many deer were on the island and everything, I knew I had found home.
Wait, so you mentioned a possible hopeful career in music, and whenever I hear the name Doc Myers, I think music, I think singing, other than optometry, I think Elvis, I think Jimmy Buffett. And you're familiar with, you know, very familiar with the stage too. So what is it about music?
Well, that was my first prayer. You know, I wanted to sing. I spent 3 years in the Children's Hospital in Portland. And, you know, my folks were up in Sitka at that time. And somehow the music playing, you know, I was a little kid then, but those songs, Honeycomb Started Life in It, you know, I knew there was something. And my mom's side, everybody played guitar. Everybody sang. Yeah. We went to family reunions, and they still have them. They're called Guitars and Gunpowder. Everybody brings 2 guns and a guitar. And they do it now in Jamestown, not the Kool-Aid places. This is up around Sonora, California.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But it was my dad sang Streets of Laredo, my mom sang Hank. Mm-hmm. So I learned C chord from one, G from the other. And, you know, out of my kids, Bubba was the only one that could hear a song and play it. And now my best moments, or if we have a warm August night, I do a set with him. Or I go to Hawaii. I ran over to 2 months ago, and we played. They had a little art gallery thing, and we played for it, which is, he likes to do reggae and that stuff. So he goes, no woman, no cry. And I go, everything's going to be all right. And we cross it together. So it's fun.
I mentioned Elvis and Jimmy Buffett. Who are your biggest influences or idols?
You know, I think when you can understand, I was in Hawaii and this girl said, what do you want to do? She said, well, you can't just go to Vegas. You got to have a set. So we went down to Baja and San Felipe, and I practiced. And the three hit people that were popular then was Elvis, and he was doing Wise Men Say and all that stuff. And down the street was Righteous Brothers going, You never close your eyes. And then was Johnny Cash going, How high is the water, mama? So I learned all three of those guys. But I think the blues corner of Ray Charles and Sam Cooke and Lionel Richie, you know, if I had a chance to do something over that was really, I think it's not trite. I mean, I still hear Once, Twice, Three Times a Lady, and I pull over the side of the road and listen to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's those, I guess, crooners were probably touching the buttons in my heart.
And you're also a veteran of the Kodiak stage. What are some of your favorite shows you've been a part of here, or favorite parts?
Well, you can imagine the first one I did was The King and I, and Gary Stevens, our senator, was my director.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
We had no stage in those days. We had the college.
Right.
But the center wall comes out in the college, so it was like center stage theater. And that was cool.
Very intimate. Intimate space for performers.
He ordered the costumes from San Francisco, and, you know, we looked as good as you could look. And in later years, I suppose there was one play that Brigadoon that I tried out for, and I didn't get it. No, it was another play. But anyway, it came down, I didn't get the part. And they practiced for 5 weeks, and then I got a call one night, and he said, kiss me, Kate. That was it. He said, you wanted that part, because the lead actor befalled disaster, and the show had practiced for 5 weeks and had 2 weeks before showtime. And I said, how many lines are there? There was even Shakespeare in that. I was never a Shakespearean. Oh, yeah. And he said, 1,800 maybe. And I said, how long? But before I tried out, I had reduced the script down to pocket size, put rings through it so I could, whatever he wanted, I could do it. Well, I said, let me sleep on it. And I didn't sleep. I stayed up all night, went through just to see if it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out, I said, I don't think I can learn all these, but I'll tell you what, if you put these hard parts for me in the back of the orchestra pit, so just the cues I can see to keep me going, we got a deal. And so behind every musician in the orchestra pit was a board. Yeah, and we pulled it off. But those are the memories that are great. And the last one I did that, I got to play God.
Oh, yeah, Coffee with God.
Yeah,
yes,
that was cool. But Tarzan. You know, Lissa is so good at interpreting, finding your best forte.
Right.
And for me to beat my chest and have, you know, play Kerchek was, you know, the king of the monkeys.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
It was great. And the kids loved it. I mean, they loved to see.
Yeah.
They loved
I had 20
you
kids.
There. Yeah.
And they'd climb all over me. It was like, you know, I have 8 grandkids. None of them are in Alaska. They're in 6 states. And you know what? That's part of my... Yeah, the excitement about retirement.
What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. There's a smile on my face for the whole human race. Why, it's almost like being in love.
I also think, when I think of Doc Myers, I also think of the Lions.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Lions and your time with service organizations.
I came in the town broke with lots of school loans, and I went to the bank, and the banker said, I told him I need enough money to set up. And he said, let's talk about it over lunch. And he took me to a Lions meeting at the Elks. And when we walked in, the president said, who's taking notes? The banker said, the doctor will. I said, you can't read my writing. He said, you're the only one reading it. So I was secretary for 2 years.
In that voluntold,
yes,
right?
But I got my loan. And so that started me off. And, you know, I started off as secretary. I went through all the little chairs, ended up being zone chairman, which was for everybody on the Aleutian chain, all the towns had Lions clubs. Mm-hmm. And I bought a boat called it Eye Care and tried to do the villages. It was licensed in 6 villages. But, you know, Coast Guard rescued me a couple times and it talked me. I broke my equipment just right here one time on the rock pile, you know. So I started flying, and I ended up buying a place in Dutch Harbor, and I went out there 12 years. And just 1 week every 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the Lions was strong out there. We set up pull tabs in Bethel, Kodiak, and Dutch Harbor. And we made so much money in Kodiak on rippies that we started the football team.
Right.
And we spent $86,000 on the gear just the first order through. So the Lions, as I progressed, I was governor, you know, which is get to fly around the state and do attaboys. And then I had an opportunity to be an international director, which is actually harder to do than be a doctor.
Really?
There's 16 each year in the world for 210 nations. Hmm. I made 42 trips in 2 years that I was on the board, and they were places like Bangkok, Busan. You know, I put Australia. I went down and gave awards and recognized people who dedicated their lives for humanitarian service, and that was the job. And, you know, some of the finest, amazing people I'll never forget. But I kept their address, and hopefully we can visit them again.
Well, yeah, you've got time now.
Yeah. So that was, Lions has been, I suppose, the warm August night, which came from the Bear Country Music Festival. Mm-hmm. We've done that, you know, over 25 years. And that filled that fix in me I needed for music that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I've met so many musicians across the state that I still try to run into once in a while. It's sad that COVID kind of killed that last year, but I made contact with everybody who's faithful playing music, and I think that train will ride again. But I've been looking for someone to pass a microphone to for a long time. That and arm wrestling. I've run the arm wrestling for 38 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, I won the arm wrestling event in the heavyweight the first year I was here. And they said, you not only won the event, you're the new chairman. And I've been looking for someone to take over that. I've got my eye on Julian Heiner.
Oh, you know,
he's skookum, and he just...
Well, maybe if you tell him all he has to do is beat you in a feat of strength and...
set that up.
Yeah.
Guess what you won.
Exactly.
Well, that's cool.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, Doc. You're in the middle of you've sold your business and you're in the middle of training someone up. So the
new Dr. Knoll, he's still in the Air Force. He's a reservist, but he goes out and does his 2 days a month or whatever, doing eyes somewhere. And he's in Fairbanks. He's been working with an ophthalmological group, so he's as sharp as you can get on disease and that. And I saw him working with kids today, and you know. There's when you can go, hi, boys and girls, you know that because there's a broad span of care in a community clinic. I was kind of afraid Mayberry was a little hard for him getting here, but he's been here many times hunting and fishing.
Oh, good.
And now he tells me, he says, I got a 36-foot charter boat over in Seward. I said, really? You know, so I think he'll adapt well.
Okay.
But we're going to have a little open house this week. And if you can, stop by the clinic and say bye to me. Because I'm passing the eye chart, and say hi to Eric, because you know he's the new man in the swimming pool, and it's good to make him feel part of the community. You know, we all have that stranger feeling at some time in our life.
Oh yeah, well thanks again, Doc, for coming in, and best of luck to you, and thanks for everything that you've done for our community, for my kids, and getting them glasses, and it's been great. We will see you.
Okay, bless you. Thank you for being a part of the village.